The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, July 26, 2021.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, and engineer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
Oh, my God, it's your birthday. Happy birthday to you, my love.
And Thank you.
And I just love, I just love doing this show with you. And also, my dear friend, Marnie Roth, happy, happy birthday to you. Well, this is a very special show this morning. Joining me on the phone this morning will be Eleanor Pam, who is the executive director for the organization Veteran Feminists of America. The purpose of Veteran Feminists of America is to honor, record, and preserve the history of the accomplishments of women and men active in the feminist movement, to educate the public on the importance of the changes brought about by the women's movement, and to preserve the movement's history for future generations. Amazing. You know, folks, we had a little bit of technical difficulty, but we're back. And right now, I want to send out special condolences to the family of Michael O'Brien. He was a friend of veteran Navy pilot and owner of the Cricklewood restaurant here in Sonoma County with his beautiful wife, Lynette. Unfortunately, it burned down in the Tubbs fire in 2017. And I want to read something that was on his program that I think is very, very, very important. And that is, let me go ahead and say it. Love those on your path. They are our teachers. Celebrate every day. Never lose your curiosity for life. And every meal is a gift to be savored. And look to the sky, for I'm flying with the hawks. And what's so interesting is he was flying with the hawks because he had a special ritual with the United States Navy. And I was so aware that when they handed him the flag, they folded it and unfolded it. When they handed them the flag, they said, "This is from the United States Congress and the President of the United States." And this is the first time that I ever sat in a ceremony that I heard those words. And I was so overwhelmed when I looked at the flag spread out. It was so beautiful. I mean, I looked at the white stripe and I thought to myself, this is the purity of our ideas. You know, we are one nation with liberty and justice for all. That's a pure, that's such a beautiful, beautiful idea. And I looked at the red. It was, to me, it was the blood that's been spilt by all the young people who put themselves on the front line. We had a revolution. We had a civil war that freed slavery. And all the things and all the wars and all the commitments. I mean, we had a friend of ours. I remember he lost his son in the Iraq war. And the reason his son signed up is because he believed in America. He believed in the Constitution. He believed in freedom and justice for everybody. So it's just amazing. And then those beautiful stars. I looked to the heavens. I looked to the sky. The sky was so beautiful. And we were at this club place called the Saddlebrook Club. And for the first time in my life, I was able to see people playing polo on these gorgeous horses. And I looked up at the sky, and I saw the blueness of it, just like the blue were the stars and the white stars. And I couldn't see any stars, of course. It was daytime. But I just visualized that we're all part of this mystical, beautiful, beautiful universe. And I wept. I wept. I wept for my grandmothers, for all my family who came over from Europe because they were escaping oppression, and they came. And my grandmother, like she said, when she saw the Statue of Liberty, she just wept. And when she saw, I could imagine what she felt like when she saw the American flag. To her, it meant freedom. And it does. We are a free country. And in order for us to hold on to our freedom, we must all come together as one nation, with those ideas and those ideals. You know, it's really interesting when people ask me, "Who are you, Elaine?" The first thing I say is, "I'm a human being." The second thing I say is, "I'm a woman." and the other people can say, you know, they're men, you know, but the thing is that we are human beings living on this planet, and we are blessed to be in a country that we are right now, and we need to appreciate it, and we need to love our flag a little bit more and quit making underwear out of it. I mean, that really bothers me. And it was really a very sacred ceremony. You know, you could see the feeling. I mean, it was amazing. Well, you know, as I always say on every show, our history is our strength. And we have three important birthdays that are at the end of this month. On July 24th, 1897, Amelia Earhart was born. She was the noted aviation pioneer and author, the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic, the first person to fly solo across the Pacific from Hawaii to the mainland. Thank you, Amelia. You opened the airways for women. You opened so many things for women. It's an honor to be able to announce your birthday. And she made her transition in 1937. Wow, 3 years before I was born. I wonder how my mother felt, you know, and I start thinking about my mother. What did she feel all of a sudden, this woman flying? I mean, it was probably, you know, we didn't even have, back then, we didn't even have the right to own property or even own our own children. And here this woman took to the air. So thank you, Amelia Earhart. And then another very, very strong woman, and one woman that we really need to be aware of, who was born July 28th, 1879, and she made her transition in 1966. That was Lucy Burns, suffragist. She was the one who formed the National Women's Party with Alice Paul, and they picketed the White House for women's suffrage. And listen to this, folks. They were arrested six times. What were they arrested for? Because they wanted the right to vote? We live in a democracy. Everybody is equal. But women were not considered equal way back then. But these women stood up for it. You know, Alice Paul herself was actually waterboarded. And then another interesting birthday, and that's July. She was born July 31st, 1924, and made her transition in 2010, was Geraldine. I love this name. Geraldine Hoff Doyle. Possibly with a capital P, because they don't know for sure, but they think it really was her. She was the model for the World War II We Can Do It poster, you know, Rosie the Riveter, which came to symbolize Rosie the Riveter, women who worked in factories to support the war effort. You know, when you think about that, women were in the factory supporting the war effort while men were on the battle line. Again, that red line in our flag. They were spilling blood for our freedom. And the women were home taking care of business, building the aircrafts, building the ships, getting the ammunition together. Oh, war is so sad when you think about it. But the most interesting thing about it is that when the war was over and the men came back, the women had to go back to their homes, and we said, we are not going there. We have experienced our own independence, and it was one foot in front of another. It still is right now. 2021, we're still struggling. We're still struggling for equality and equal pay. I mean, we don't even have the equal rights movement yet. One vote. One state, that's all we need. I mean, I got my fingers crossed that maybe it will happen this time. Well, this is the last Monday of the month. And will someone email me at elaine@womenspaces.com and let me know, where did July go? It reminds me of that Bob Dylan song, Where Have All the Flowers Gone? I'm going to start thinking about, where is July gone? I mean, my God, it's the end of the month already. But at the end of the month, we always do the Women's Pledge. And, you know, it's very interesting. I want to tell you a little story. I make these cards. I have these little pink cards with the pledge on it. And I also have the introduction, you know, information about the radio show. But it's really interesting when I look at that. So I decided to call the company that I print the cards with, and I asked them, how many cards did I order? You know, how many cards have I passed out? I had to make a new order. I think I was down to 10. You're not going to believe this. This is obsessive. This is obsessive. I have passed out over 7,000 of those cards. And I hope there's at least 10% of you out there that are listening. That would be just wonderful. But can you imagine that? 7,000 women. And how many children? I don't even know how many children I handed to. In fact, when I see a group of children, I will walk up to them and I will give them a card and we will all do the pledge together. And as I've told my listeners many, many times, I developed the pledge for my beautiful grandson, Ryan, when he came out one day of one of his daycare centers and says, "Grandma, they said I'm a bad boy. And I said, "Oh, no, Ryan, your self-esteem doesn't depend on them." And I wrote this little jingle for him. So now I'm going to share it with you. And I'm very blessed this morning. I have a dear, dear friend in the audience here listening to the show, my friend Virge Bellinger. And he is also he's a radio nut. Well, hey, say a few words. And I'll tell you, he supports women 1,000%. And he's
absolutely
a dear friend.
Well, you know, sometimes I have to flap my arm to make sure I'm not dreaming, because you see the situation today, and we're supposed to be, you know, intelligent and sophisticated and all these different things. Yet you see such disparity on the treatment of women, and not only their treatment, but their pay, what they're making on money. And, you know, the whole thing is just, it's amazing that we're still like this today.
Well, it's wonderful to hear good support from a male. We have here, we're here also to celebrate Ken's birthday today. Ken is, I can't believe, Ken, you look really good for an old man.
Well,
you know,
thank
that?
You.
you really look good. Well, let's do the pledge. And I'd like you to join me, Virge and Ken, if you could please indulge me and join me with the pledge. I will say the first line and then you just repeat after me. Okay, let's go. My self-esteem does not depend
on anything
outside of me. My self-esteem
depends
on my relationship with myself and my higher power. Oh, that sounds good, gentlemen. Thank you. Oh, it feels so good to have these two powerful men here. Well, I've been training them. Let me tell you something. They're in good order. And I really thank you for sharing that, Virge. I wish more men were more concerned about what is happening to the plight of women. Well, let's do this self-esteem just a little bit more. You know, I'm just gonna talk a little bit about it. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. What does that mean? That means if you don't like me, that's okay. I can still like myself. You know, if someone judges you as negative, you know, I get all kinds of stuff coming in about the radio, all kinds of opinions. And I just say, hey, my self-esteem doesn't depend on that opinion. You know, that doesn't mean I ignore the opinion, because oftentimes people will give you some good feedback and you can always improve yourself, but it doesn't devastate me. It just opens my heart and my ears to listen to what they have to say. And then my self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself. You know, what does that mean? It means that inner self-talk, you're telling yourself kind things. You're letting yourself know you're okay. You appreciate the accomplishments that you've made. And my higher power, you know, however your spirituality is, you know, some people believe in a higher power. Some people believe in God. Some people believe in Jesus, Muhammad, you name it. Everybody has their whole idea. But to me, the higher power is the mystery of this great universe. Like I said, when I was at the memorial for Michael O'Brien, I looked up to the sky when I saw those stars and that blue color. And I thought, what a mystery. What a mystery. We just had a full moon. I look up at that full moon and I say, there's got to be something greater than me that is making all this happen. So my self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself. That's those inner voices, to calm them down. And my higher power is the mystery that I am so powerful that I don't fall off this planet. I mean, it's just amazing what happens. You know, I was looking at my great-granddaughter, Satori, you know, who's running around like a bat out of hell. She's so darn cute. And I thought to myself, my God, I just saw her 2 years ago when she was, you know, her head was in the hands of my grandson, who I remember when he was a baby. You know, how did that happen? That's the mystery of creation. So there has to be a creator or a higher power, or like the Native Americans say, great spirit. the great spirit. I mean, what a feeling. So everybody just kind of sit back and just hold yourself and just relax a little bit. And I'm going to say it very slowly. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. And I want you to know something. You know, I worked on the Andy Lopez situation, which we just saw that film, 3 Seconds in October, an amazing film. Make sure that people look at it. And I realized when I had to go before the Board of Supervisors or the City Council or some of these meetings or even talking to groups, I would say that pledge. Because I knew I was talking about some heavy things, and I would say my self-esteem does not depend on any of these people. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. Wow. Well, I want to thank my grandson for inspiring me. And, you know, when he graduated UC Santa Cruz, he was coming down the hill, and he saw me down there so proud, my chest out, you know, hey, my grandson's graduating college. And he said that to me, "Grandma, remember, my self-esteem does not depend on anything outside me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power." And now he's going to be the father of a second child. Amazing. Well, we're going to take a musical break. And the song I'm going to be playing is Standing on the Shoulders, sung by Earth Mama. And I want you to know that this song was chosen to be one of the songs on the collection of all the music that was presented for the centennial last year, 2020, when we celebrated 100 years. So let's go ahead and let's play Standing on the Shoulders, Ken, sung by Earth Mama. And when we come back, we will be talking with Eleanor Pam, who is the executive director for the organization Veteran Feminists of America. The purpose of Veteran Feminists of America Incorporated is to honor, record, and preserve the history of the accomplishments of men and women active in the feminist movement, to educate the public on the importance of the changes brought about by the women's movement, and to preserve, very important, to preserve the moments history for future generations. And I look forward to this interview. I'm very excited, a little bit nervous, you know, but very, very excited. So let's go ahead and play that song, and then let's get a hold of Eleanor.
I am standing on the shoulders of the ones who came before me. I am stronger for their courage. I am wiser for their words. I am lifted by their longing for a fair and brighter future. I am grateful for their vision, for their toiling on this earth. Standing on the shoulders of the ones who came before us. They are saints and they are humans. They are angels, they are friends. We can see beyond the struggles and the troubles and the challenge. When we know that by our efforts, things will be better in the end. By their passion for our liberty, I will stand a little and my shoulders will be there to hold the ones who follow me.
Yes, we are standing on the shoulders of many, many great women. For you just joining in, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, and Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and I am so excited. Without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. Joining me on the phone is Eleanor Pam, who is the Executive Director for the Organization of Veteran Feminists of America. Hello, Eleanor. How are you this morning?
Hi, Elaine. I'm so honored to speak to you and your audience today.
Oh, I am just thrilled that you're here. I'm a little bit nervous, you know, because I'm so excited. But do you mind if I tell folks just a little bit about you before we begin?
Go right ahead. I just have one small correction. I'm not the executive director. I'm the president.
Oh, you're the president. Excuse me, Madam President. I'm so glad you corrected me. You know, you go on the internet. I know we can't keep up with all the information. Well, Eleanor Pam, PhD, holds three advanced degrees and is professor emeritus at the City University of New York. An expert in women and violence, her principal focus include women in prison, women's prisons, sexual harassment, domestic violence, gender discrimination, rape, and gender injustice. She served in the New York City Commission to Combat Family Violence for 8 years. In addition, she participated in several FBI think tanks at their Behavioral Sciences Unit in Gutisico, Virginia. Boy, that's a
Quantico.
Mouthful.
Yeah.
That's a mouthful. Police abuse in intimate relationship and police homicide suicide in connection with domestic violence. Boy, that's amazing. You know, I would love to have you on at another time just to talk about this aspect of your life.
Sure.
She has been a vocal and visible advocate, presence, and media representative for high-profile female inmates in maximum security prisons, making appearances, delivering lectures, and giving interviews for print, radio, film, and television outlets around the country. It is absolutely an honor to have you on, Eleanor. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
No. We'll let things evolve as they do.
Well, talk about, you know, one of the things about Women's Spaces is that we are really here to encourage other women to get involved. So talk about how you first became involved in the women's movement and what inspired you and what changed you because of the movement.
Sure. That's a mouthful of a question, too. So I'll give you an answer in three prongs: home, college, and work. So I'll start quickly and briefly with home. I have three brothers. And even though I skipped grades three times due to my academic success, and I was placed throughout high school into an advanced program for gifted students, and I also won the history and creative writing medals at graduation, none of those achievements were enough. the prevailing gender biases of the day were, you know, just outstanding. My brothers were expected to go to college and pursue professional careers, while I was programmed to become a secretary, get married, and procreate promptly. So, growing up, I realized that the surrounding culture valued males over females. And this motivated me to overcome what I believe to be a gender handicap by excelling academically and athletically. So that was the home thing. You know, I grew up in a very patriarchal home. And when I got to Brandeis, I didn't get to Brandeis that quickly because there were quotas for females. We had to have higher grades than the males. So there were handicaps just getting into that college. And then finally, when I was a faculty member at the City University of New York, there were only 1% of faculty members who were full professors. Ultimately, I became a full professor myself when I was 32 years old, and I was also the highest-ranking administrator at the university at the time. And what would happen is females would drift into my office, and they would tell me about not getting promoted or not getting fair salaries or not getting tenure or being all of the things that they were having disadvantages because of their gender. And so ultimately, I would go to bat for them, and then my reputation spread throughout the university. There were 18 colleges at City University, and I would end up getting calls from people at other colleges, and I would go to the presidents of those colleges or the chancellor of the university, and I would bring the grievances forward. And ultimately, I began to see the pattern that women really were not getting a fair share. And so me and some colleagues, we sued the university for sex discrimination on 12 causes of action, which we took about 10 years to finally litigate, and we resolved it in favor of the plaintiffs successfully.
Wow, that is...
Thank God. So that was my, the three prongs that told me something was amiss with respect to equity and equality with respect to women.
Well, thank you. Thank you for doing, stepping forward like that must have just been amazing. So, you know, when I was reading Veteran Feminist of America, when I was reading on the website, I suddenly found out that the National Organization for Women was also involved. You know, I'm just a retired after 5 years as the president for our local chapter here.
So I thought
you'd talk, you know, I mean, it sounds like that evolved for you, that move that gave you the motivation to start in an organization like this. So talk about it. Talk about what motivated you and what your beginning roots were and how this all came about. And I want to, it's really funny, I want to tell my listeners a little story. When I first talked to Eleanor and I hadn't read the whole website, I said to her, well, Eleanor, I'm anti-war. but I'm curious in veteran.
Common mistake.
Yes. So I just very curious of how this all started and what did NOW have to do with this?
Well, we were NOW. We're the grandmothers. I mean, we were the pioneers that started NOW, and NOW we're Veteran Feminists of America, really are those old activists who NOW are dedicated to ensuring the legacy of the triumphs and the victories and even the handicaps and setbacks of the women who started the women's movement. So if you'd like to know about my experience in NOW and what that was like, you know, and then I could take you down to the present, which is Veteran Feminists of America.
Just go ahead. It's your show, Eleanor. Just tell
it's
us.
My
tell
show.
Us. I mean, this is wonderful. We need to know this history. Our history is our strength.
Well, that's exactly what Veteran Feminists of America is about. Actually, it's about documenting the legacy of these wonderful, wonderful women who started the women's movement, otherwise known as second wave feminism. So. I came to NOW through my friend Kate Millett, who wrote Sexual Politics. I'm not sure your audience is familiar with her. She's one of the real leaders of feminism. But NOW itself started actually through the the brain and the thinking and the energy of Betty Friedan, who in 1963 wrote The Feminine Mystique. And that book had to do with the discontent of women housewives who had college educations, basically from the Seven Sisters schools, and who were unhappy. And Betty said that that was a problem that had no name. And it was strange to her that these affluent women, and they mainly were, and very educated, were not happy. And she found that out by issuing a questionnaire 10 years after graduation to find out how her classmates were doing, and they weren't doing well. And that seemed strange to her because materially they had everything they needed. And so she lived in Washington, D.C., and she had a friend named Catherine East. And Catherine worked for the Department of Labor, and Catherine would sneak the statistics from her office out to Betty to show her that women, in relation to work and jobs, were not earning at all the money that men were. And she had all the statistics in her hand to show it. And so Betty, together with Catherine East and a few other women, thought about this, and Betty decided that she wanted to create a national association, an NAACP for women, and she wanted to model that after that organization. And so that was the genesis of the idea for founding NOW. When I came into the movement, it was really in its infancy. I don't know, maybe it was a year old. And there were very few people in the organization. And so it was sort of like the Wild West.
I can imagine.
The world was open to us. We knew something was wrong. We weren't sure what. And then we discovered it was everything. people from where they were started to circle in on individual areas. I came from academia, so I was interested in education. And so Kate and I formed the first education committee of NOW, and there were only two of us, and the committees were all very small, as you can imagine. And Kate was the president, and of course I was the vice president, and we elected each other. and other people were interested in sexuality, credit cards, divorce, custody, you know, whatever areas engaged them in their own personal lives. So they would create committees from where they stood in the world, committees of two or three people. And it was extraordinary when you think about that now, that we would sort of tackle these huge, huge issues. On a funny level, I mean, we thought, for example, on sexuality. Betty Dodson wrote a book called, she was into masturbation, so she wrote Sex for One. That was the title of her book, and she would teach women how to masturbate and what they looked like generally, and she would give them speculums and mirrors. And
I have to interrupt you here and tell you a funny story. You know, I was part of the New Wave, and I came to Sonoma State in 1973 at the height of women's studies. And all of a sudden, we come into the room one day. You know, we were all studying our bodies ourselves. And I actually interviewed Nina. I mean, she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. She lives here locally. And all of a sudden, we go into this room, and they pull the blinds down and all this other stuff, and they bring out these speculums. And I
knew where this was going to go.
I said, wait a minute, you know. And at first, everybody was very inhibited, you know. But then about 10 seconds into it, man, we're talking about this and that. I mean, it was such.
Oh, sure.
It
sure.
Was.
I mean,
it was so liberating.
It was, and it's important. First of all, to the whole idea was that women were as entitled to sexual gratification as men.
Exactly.
I mean, that was the point of that, and also, you know, to acquaint you with your own body, and of course, to make decisions about your own body and your own health,
so, and have choice. Have choice.
Exactly right. So it was serious, even though it was embarrassing, and some people, you know. But so you were part of that, huh?
And it was so interesting because we were talking about also a whole thing on birthing and stuff, and I had a cesarean, and I remember I stood up in the class just crying because I didn't have it naturally, and all these women were embracing me. Oh no, Elaine, you gave birth. You know, I mean, it was the most amazing experience in
exactly.
my life.
Exactly. You know, and then there was the technology of sex where Dee sold the sex toys, and it was liberating. Everything we were trying to do was to expand the mind.
Exactly.
And to expand the horizon and to say to women, you know, you're not in this tiny little bubble. There's a whole world out there, and you should experience it, and you should have the same opportunities as men do and the same entitlements. So that was now, when, you know, in the very early, early days, you know, something would happen, and we called them zaps. For example, on television there was a newscaster, he did the weather, and he talked about an 11-year-old girl who got raped, and he said she should have just lied back and enjoyed it. So in no time at all, we organized a whole group and went down to the station and surrounded him, and we got him fired. So it was, like, very spontaneous, everything we were doing. Today's now is bureaucratic, and they have chapters, and they have elections and all of that. We were really, as I said, the Wild West, you know, just shooting from the hip.
Oh, Sonoma State was that way, too. I mean, we were all teaching class. I taught a class at Survival as a Mother. I was picketed because they wanted men in there, and I had to do, like, an equal. I said, there are so many minutes in a day, and blah, blah, blah. You mean to tell me we can't have 45 minutes twice a week to be just with women? I mean, it was just an explosion. It was amazing.
It was an explosion. And I have to tell you, the most fun I've ever had in my life was in early feminism. And everybody I've talked to that shared that has the same thing to say.
Well, you'll love this one. We had three groups. We had the gays, the straights, and the I don't knows.
it's kind of similar, except, you know, the first schism that we had in NOW was about lesbians. That was the first real split, because Betty Friedan, who was our first president and obviously who started the whole movement of feminism and has to be really honored for that, had problems with the lesbians, and she called them the Lavender Menace. And she wanted them out of the organization and, in fact, purged them because she felt that wanting to attract middle-class women, they would think that we were freaks and we were man-haters and, you know, all of the names that we were called regularly in early feminism. And she didn't want that. She wanted to make it respectable. And so she really kind of had an attitude of get them out of here. But the lesbians were probably the most energetic, the most insightful, the most wonderful group within NOW. I mean, they were also the most brilliant, by the way. I mean, they were extraordinary. And they left in droves and formed their own organizations after a while. And Betty, you know, was really pilloried for years and years and years until finally in her old age she ultimately apologized for it.
Well, it was also, again, it was what happened for me was because I had a very dear friend of mine who came out, and I was scared because she had a child. And I actually wrote a paper called The Lesbian Mother. And, you know, and went into and began to speak to women, and I began to realize, hey, wait a minute, you know, we have a choice. We're not killing anybody. We're not hurting anybody. We're just making a choice of who we are and what is comfortable for us. And as women, we must support that. And that,
absolutely.
You know, and that's the way it was, you know, and the thing is, that's why I always announce myself. I'm a human being first and I'm a woman second, you know, and the rest, you know, just leave me alone. Let me have my own choices as long as I don't hurt anybody. Well, you know, it goes by very quickly in this program, and I was going to have another musical break, but I'm looking at the time, and I think we need to consider, keep on with the conversation. And just to tell my listeners, you are listening to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz. I'm your host. And with me on the telephone, a very, very exciting conversation that I'm having with Eleanor Pam, who is the president of Veteran Feminist of America. Congratulations, Eleanor. And we are talking about the women's movement, the early stages, and now we are going to continue our conversation.
Sure.
And one thing I want to let my listeners know, I was going to play I Am Woman, you know, and that was our theme song back then, but well, let's just continue. continue with our conversation.
Yeah, well, I heard your first song, which was Kay Weaver's song, which is Standing on the Shoulders.
Oh,
but
yes.
But that wasn't Kay Weaver singing, though.
No, that's Earth Mama. And you know, Earth Mama, that song was also chosen last year to be part of the trilogy that of all the songs that they were playing for the centennial. So it's
wonderful. It's wonderful. So let me talk for a minute about Gloria Steinem.
Let me just go into
sure.
this a little bit. Many critics of the second wave of feminism have demonstrated the whiteness of the movement and the lack, particularly by black women and other feminists. You know, this has really been an issue. So talk a little bit more about how your organization and what it stands for and how this is helping that aspect of the women's movement.
Well, let me talk about your original comment about black women or women of color in relation to the women's movement. Some of the most outstanding women that we had in the women's movement were women of color. Audre Lorde, Flo Kennedy, Shirley Chisholm, Pauline Murray. Amazing women. And Veteran Feminists of America is an organization that really is dedicated to recording and preserving the history of the accomplishments of women and men who are active in the feminist movement. And we're trying to educate the public on the importance of the changes brought about by that movement, which I think, by the way, is the most important revolution in history, and also to preserve our history for future generations and to inspire future generations. That was the original mission. We have something called the Pioneer Histories Project, where we are now videotaping all of these pioneers that are still alive, and if we don't have them alive, we're collecting old videotapes of people who've passed, trying to compile as much as possible of these histories as possible. The Histories Project is kind of the implementing arm of the Veteran Feminists of America.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting you say that. You know, I mean, all of a sudden, selfishly, I had a thought about myself. You know, I was on not only before I'm on the radio from 1976 is when I started this show, and I ended it when I went with my career, then went on, then came back about 10 years ago. But also, we did a television show. So, what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to get you in touch with that. That is amazing that you're doing that, because there are so many great women, and that the idea of inspiration, you know, inspiration is so important. So go ahead.
And by the way, 19% of our videotapes are of women of color. We really have scoured the earth to find them, and we have found them. So this whole thing about they didn't exist, it was interesting. You know, that's a canard, actually, because one-fifth of our videotapes are of women of color. So, if you'd like to talk for, I know you're sort of like don't have a lot of time, but there was a reason for that, incidentally, why black women did not come into the movement.
Go ahead.
So much. The people that came into the movement basically came out of the civil rights movement or the anti-war movement. That's who joined now for a variety of reasons. But the black women had a particular problem, which is that the males that they were involved with, whether they were husbands or boyfriends or whatever, wanted them to focus on racial issues, racial civil rights, and not female civil rights. And so they really kind of discouraged their women, and I put that in quotes, to joining now and to joining Second Wave. So that was one of the problems that we had. Interestingly enough, the women of color that I spoke with told me that they felt more discriminated against because they were women than because they were black women.
Well, Shirley Chisholm said that when they asked her. But then when they
a
asked
lot
her
of them that. Did say that and said it to me personally. So that's kind of fascinating. And the problem with the anti-war movement people were that the men there were really chauvinist pigs and wanted the women not to have equality within the anti-war movement and wanted them to make the coffee and be sex partners. And so now benefited from those women who left in droves. And so that was part of the genesis of now and of Second Wave.
Well, it's certainly changing. I mean, and when you look at the progress that has been made, I mean, thank goodness. And, you know, you look at people that are young women now that are coming forward, particularly women running for office today. I mean,
extraordinary.
It has changed. It has changed. And we have to keep moving, because if we don't keep moving, it's going to end. Well, talk a little bit. You said you were going to talk a little bit about Gloria Steinem. What did you want to bring
sure.
in? What did you want to bring in about her?
Well, Gloria, unlike most people think Gloria was in the movement in the early days. She wasn't. She didn't come in until the early 70s, actually. And as you know, Friedan was, you know, wrote her book in 63 and now started in 66. So Gloria was kind of a latecomer, but of course when she came, everything changed. Because Friedan was, she was a great woman, but not a good woman. And she did not have the face of feminism that turned people on, but Gloria did. And once Gloria came on the scene, all the ink went to Gloria. And that created a problem for Betty, who was very jealous of that. Gloria was a great spokesman because she was attractive to both men and women, and she had a way of putting things that were kind of sweet and charming and non-confrontational and not frightening. Although Gloria is actually one of the most radical women I know. You wouldn't know it because when she speaks, or did in those days, she sounded so reasonable and moderate that nobody was put off by her. But Betty was a bulldog. I mean, she just did not have an attractive persona. And so when Gloria came along, Betty felt that she was being usurped, and so...
You know, that came out a lot. I don't know how you felt about the film Mrs. America, but mm-hmm. that came out. But you know, right now we're coming to the end of the segment. I can't believe how fast. I mean, there's so many things we can go with. But what I would like to know at this point is if you could share with us how we can support your organization, how we can get a hold of you, and can people be who do you want for members? I mean, I know for myself, as I listen to you, I will definitely apply, because you know there's a lot of stuff that I'm looking to archive and looking to, you know, for people to know about all these wonderful interviews.
Yeah, we could actually do a videotape of you too.
Yes.
Okay, veteranfeministofamerica.org is our website, and there you will find the videotapes and the biographies of what we call fabulous feminists. We would also love you to join. There's no age limit. You don't have to be a pioneer feminist to support the work of pioneer feminists. So we're happy to have any of your listeners join. We would love some donations. If you are disposed to send some, that would be great, because we want to continue to do these videotapes while we still have energy and life in us, because it's the oldsters, us oldsters, who are doing all of this work, and thank God still have the energy and the health, but many of us don't, and we are losing a lot of people to disability and age and tiredness and so on. So, yes, please, just look at the website. There you can see how you can join. There you can see how you can donate. And there you can see how you can ask to be videotaped, and we'd be delighted to do that. In the old days, we needed cameras and all kinds of complicated machinery, and now, because we have Zoom, it's much, much easier. And we're a national organization, so it was hard for us to get the people in California and Oregon and Texas. But and we're all over the world, by the way. So
give us that website one more time, and is there any...
It's one word, veteranfeministofamerica.org. No spacing.
And just to remind my listeners that everything, all the information will be on our website, www.womenspaces.com. Well, Eleanor Pam, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you so much for being such a wonderful guest on this show. And also, I'm going to reach out to you again now that I understand even more about all the wonderful things that you are doing. So thank you so much for being part of Women's Spaces.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wow, what a show this was. But you know, folks, at the beginning of the show, we had some technical difficulties, so we had a few extra minutes. And you know, in light of the interview that I did with Eleanor Pam from the Veteran Feminist of America organization, I really believe it is so important that we play the song I Am Woman. The song I'm going to play right now is sung by Pink Martini, but the original song was sung by Helen Reddy, and it became the feminist national anthem almost. I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar, with numbers too big to ignore. So let's go ahead and listen to the song, and then we're going to end the show. And listen, thank you so much for listening to Women's Spaces and for supporting the stations that I'm on. And remember, if you need any additional information, or you want to find out the website for our guest, or you want to listen to some of the past shows, just go to www.womenspaces.com. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play I Am Woman, sung by Pink Martini.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. And I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor, and no one's ever gonna keep me down again. Oh yes, I am wise, but it's wisdom born of pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I've gained. If I have to, it only serves to make me more determined to achieve my final goal. And I will come back even stronger, not a novice any longer, for you deepen the conviction of my soul. Oh yes, I am wise, but it's wisdom born of pain. Yes, I paid the price.
That's it for our show. Special thank you to Eleanor Pam, who is the executive director for the organization, Veteran Feminist of America. You know, a reminder, tell your friends that Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. this evening. I'm excited I get to listen to my own program. Remember, our children are the future. We must never lose sight of that.
You, because a woman in your life. Is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, July 26, 2021.